We want the power for the people. That's all we ask in our country dear. The sick and the hungry are unable. Protect them and those who may live in fear. We ask the young.
All right, I'd like to welcome you to the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show. We are here every Friday at 10:30 a.m. bringing you the good marketing gospel. We're not saving souls. We are saving businesses, saving jobs, saving our community. Now, if I save a soul along the way, don't hold that against me. Let's just call that icing on the cake, because the mission here at the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show is to build strong businesses in our community so that we can put our people to work. Now, we do this with business development, job creation, and service. If I start to sound like a preacher up here, and that's because my dear old dad, rest his soul, he was a Baptist minister. As a matter of fact, he passed away about 7 years ago. Matter of fact, on April 9th, and I started the radio show, and I named it in his honor, the pulpit part, because he was in that pulpit for 50-something years. I was right out there in front of him and picked up a lot of his habits and antics. Now, I wasn't called by the gospel, but I was called by another ministry. And that's to help small businesses grow and prosper. Therein lies the name Marketing Pulpit. I am Robert Gatewood, your host. And I'm here every Friday at 10:30 a.m. bringing you the good marketing gospel. I'd like to welcome you on this Good Friday. Also have in the studio, attorney Tisha Hillman. Good morning, Tisha.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the booth. As always, I enjoy having you here, because one thing, you don't bite your tongue. Your tongue is unbitten. There are no bites on your tongue. But we like people to keep it real. We got enough phoniness going out here, enough fake alternative. The truth has become elusive, a thing of the past. But when you listen to this show, we just put it out there like it is. Because we are in a time right now where we don't have time or the luxury to be playing around with worries, trying to make things cute, trying to dice things up. We're in a time where we have to come on and make things, tell it like it is. Because there once upon a time where we had the luxury where we could sit around and kind of play with worries and do footsies and make believe and wish upon fallen stars and all that kind of stuff. Well, right now, this is the real deal. We have a crazy man in the White House. He's just a knucklehead. And so we have to be real. We have to say what's on our minds. We can't be politically correct with people who don't know the meaning of the word. So what do we do about it? Well, one thing we do, we go out here and start up some successful businesses. And if you have a business and you're kind of teetering and tottering and trying to figure out how to make it work, then we need to go ahead and listen to this show and find the resources that it takes to make these businesses succeed. We start enough businesses, ladies and gentlemen. The goal of this show is to make those businesses successful. And therein lies the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show mission. It's Good Friday, Tisha. It's Good Friday.
I forgot about that. Does that make me a heathen?
No, it does not. It does not make you a heathen. Well, first of all, everybody doesn't celebrate Good Friday. It's a Christian holiday. As a matter of fact, this holiday is it celebrates the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Let's go inside the mind.
And it's really the most important holiday of the Christian faith. And people always wonder, how the heck do we decide when is Easter? Now, you notice it's a weird day. It's like April. One day it's in March, next day it's in June, next time it's in July. Well, let me give you a little background. First of all, how the date comes about. It is the first Sunday following the full moon after the vernal equinox of March 21st.
That's too much to remember. That's too much.
You didn't get that?
No.
Sunday.
The only part I remember is full moon.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. Think about March 21st. If there is a full moon on the, March 21st. So the first Sunday following the full moon after the vernal equinox, which is on March 20th, you still didn't get it.
This is how you know that people just make stuff up. So how is it that we decided that we were going to celebrate Good Friday? Why couldn't we say that it was going to be the first full moon after, you know, Labor Day, and we decided not to wear pants.
No, because I mean, it's so you random. Have to give it the religious context, and okay. that's the way it was decided.
Okay.
Now, of course, the holiday, of course, it's really like part of a holy period. Like there's 40 days leading up to Easter, which is called Lent, and that's supposed to have been the period that Jesus was wandering out in the wilderness and transforming and getting this stuff together. And so most people celebrate that period by fasting, or they give up something. And then today, of course, the Good Friday is the day actually of the crucifixion. And then he rose on Easter Sunday. So it was about a few days there where he was
in the tomb. And so why do they call it Good Friday? If somebody died, why is it good?
Well, because I guess if you put it in the context of Christianity, he gave his life so that man may live. Now, I'm not... Look, my daddy was the preacher. Okay?
I mean, I'm just wondering. I figured that you were the expert here.
You may have to ask a religious scholar. I'm sure there's some type of religious context, but it there's like days leading up to the whole week leading up to Easter itself. Like Saturday has some context, like the transition period, and Good Friday was like the day of the crucifixion. And then that each one of those days of the week leading up to Easter have some type of significance. Now, where the word good came from, I'm sure there's some type of meaning behind it. But anyway, that's kind of just giving you some context to some people who really, some of the biggest question always seems to be why does it fall on these odd days? One day it's on April 21st, next day it's on, well, it's always going to be between March 22nd and April 25th. So anyway, that's your Easter history for today. A lot of other things going on. And by the way, folks, we're going to have an exciting show today. We're going to have later in the show, we're going to have Miss Sharon Goods. She's a PR specialist, but she's also a whiz when it comes to wealth building. And she's going to talk about intergenerational transfer of wealth. And she's going to talk about the increasing the African-American wealth generation and gifting to your children inheritance early. Did you know? Now, check this out. Did you know that the average... Now, you're going to fall out of your seat when you hear this, teacher.
Right.
The average net worth of African-American women is $5.
Mm.
Not $500, not $5,000. And I'm not... For y'all beat up on me, I'm going to bring Sharon in here. Y'all can beat up on her because she's the...
Don't even beat up on her.
She's just the messenger. The average net worth of black women is $5. I didn't say 500. I didn't say 5 million. I didn't say 500. Five. Like, I got $5. Wait a minute.
Like, I got five on it.
You know, I don't have five. Well, mine must be worse because I don't even have $5 in my pocket. Oh, my goodness. I wonder what mine is.
Can't get a tank of gas. So the average. Well, they may be better off than me then, huh? Can't get a tank of gas? Is that what you're telling
me? No, not net worth. Now, if you do the calculation of net worth, it takes all your assets, subtract your liabilities, and that's your net worth. So if you have $1 million, but you owe $1,000,005, then you have a negative net worth of $5.
Mm.
So when you talk about net worth, that doesn't mean you don't have a nice car. Doesn't mean you don't have a nice house you're living in. You could be wearing Gucci, Iarucci, or whomever, but you can still have a jacked up net worth. Hey, welcome to the studio, Sharon.
Thank you very much, Robert. I really appreciate your having me on today.
All right. Well, thank you. And Sharon Goods, I've known Sharon for many years, and we go, wait, man, we've been, how long have I known you, Sharon? Since forever.
For 20 years now.
But this is the guy that she has it together, and we're going to talk about later in the show. Now, you done got my interest. I was talking to her the other day. We talk a lot, and we were talking about some web stuff, and she talked about she was telling me about this intergenerational transfer of wealth, and I said if there was ever a time we need to address this, it is now. So I said, don't wait another month. Don't wait another week. I want you on the show at the first chance you get, and I'm glad you made it over here today.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. I wanted to share a couple things. One is that the experience of being a parent, you know, I'm now in my later 60s, and the experience of being a parent, you know.
You and your what now?
I know.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay to own it. You know, we're rocking it, right?
Yeah, ain't no 60 nowhere on you.
Right. Y'all, we're rocking it.
Y'all can see this.
This generation is rocking it.
Well, so, whatever you're doing, you need to keep doing it. Okay. That's
and
why.
Give us some
share
money.
It to us. Share it with us.
Yoga. I attribute it to yoga. But one of the things that happens is that you start thinking at this age, you know, how do we take care of the generation after us?
Mm-hmm.
What should we be doing? And I just wanted to correct a couple little things. It's really we're talking about we're talking about wealth transference, but when we think about African-American women, particularly African-American women who are single between the ages of 36 and 49, comparing them to white women, the earnings of African-American women, we're talking a little bit about two different things. We're not talking about how much they earn. We're talking about the actual wealth. Wealth is not your income, not what you take home every week or every month, but how much you actually own.
Mm.
It means assets like home ownership, your stocks, your bonds. How much have you accumulated? You take that wealth and subtract how much debt you're in.
Mm.
How much credit card debt, how much you know, car debt. And when you subtract the two, that gives you your wealth. And the average wealth of African-American women, disparity between African-American women and white women, is that African-American women on average have $100 of net wealth in the median.
Mm.
Meaning half African-American women have more than $100, and half of us, unfortunately, have a wealth of under $100.
Under $100.
And for single women, it's even worse.
Ooh.
For single women, it's $5. The median. That means that half of single women between the ages 36 and 49 have a net wealth accumulation of $5.
But Sharon,
and above.
I check out the sisters. Mm-hmm. The sisters got these nice cars and they hair is so immaculately made up and they live in these nice homes and... And you telling me that this is a front? I mean,
well, no, it's not. You know,
what are you telling
us here? A lot of people attribute the lack of wealth to African American women. You know that we have misspent our money and things, but that's not. It's really systemic.
Oh.
What happens is that African Americans, in general, have a lower income. Generation in their lifetimes than whites.
So it just didn't start when they got out of school or when they.
Oh no! That's systemic. It's
okay.
Systemic. I mean, the opportunity, and then the African American woman has a double whammy because she has both the inequity for because she's of her gender and also because of her race. And so on average, we make less money than men.
Sharon, I want you to hold that thought while I'm getting up off the floor here, and my mouth is open because this is startling statistics. I'm sure the state of black men is not much better, so I know you're not picking on black women, but you just have the statistic one because you are a black woman, and so we'll tackle the men another day.
Right.
Folks, you're listening to The Marketing Pulpit. I have in the studio attorney Tisha Hillman and Sharon Goods. We're talking about the intergenerational transfer of wealth and the financial state of black women. We'll be right back after the break. This is The Marketing Pulpit, so hang on.
Good morning, SWOL traffic and weather update brought to you by Compassion International. Northbound on 295 at Benning Road. It was construction in the right lane. It's going to slow you down right now. Southbound on 295, it's also pretty slow from Benning Road to Pennsylvania Avenue. Outer loop of the Beltway is very heavy from College Park past the work zone that's set up today after New Hampshire Avenue. It's in the right lane before University Boulevard. Baltimore-Washington Parkway southbound is slow from the Beltway down to 410. Becoming a child sponsor with Compassion International will bring hope to a child in poverty. Find out how at compassion.com/radio. Now your WOL weather forecast for today. A mix of clouds and sun, a high near 70 degrees. Partly cloudy overnight down to 52 for low. And for tomorrow, cloudy, a stray shower, thunderstorm is possible, a high near 71. Steve Hirshhorn for 1450 AM and 95.9 FM WOL, where information is power.
Carl Nelson here again. Join us this afternoon at 4 for another Open Phone Friday. This is how it works, folks. If you didn't get a chance to call in this week, or previous weeks for that matter, reach out to us at 800-450-7876. Or if there was a topic that you think we should have discussed and we didn't, or if we did and you think we came up a little short, call us up. Or if there's something going down in your corner of the world that you think the rest of the universe would benefit by hearing about it, hit us up. It's toll free. It's worldwide. It's 800-450-7876. Sometimes we may have some very special guests, but we really, really want to speak to you. So let's meet up right here at 4, right after Reverend Al, on AM 1450, FM 95.9, because you know this is where the DMV comes to talk. WOL, where information is power.
This is WOL, News Talk 1450 AM and 95.9 FM.
95. That's all we ask in our country, dear. The sick and the hungry unable.
All right, I'd like to welcome you back to the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show. I am Robert Gatewood, your host. I'm here every Friday at 10:30 AM bringing you the good marketing gospel. We're not saving souls, we are saving businesses. We're here on a first Friday. A lot of things going on in the news, folks. I tell you, I was listening to, they done dropped a big old bomb over there in Afghanistan. What do you call it? The MOAB, the mother of all bombs. I looked at the picture of that. I saw a mushroom cloud. And I don't know about you all, but I don't think that's where we want to be going in this day and age, having mushroom clouds coming up in the air. I don't care what you call it. When I see a mushroom cloud, I don't care if it's nuclear, non-nuclear, or if it's just smoke. That's not the kind of image you want to be sitting out right now in these times, especially when you got a crazy guy in the White House. So I was a little thrown by that. And then, of course, we have this guy on American Airlines get beat up. I had a problem with that, too. You beat a guy up. Yeah, you just saw the thing in the news about the guy they overbooked.
United Airlines.
What did I say?
American.
Okay, United. Okay, sorry, American. United Airlines. Not American. Don't be calling me up. United Airlines. They drag. I mean, I fly. I'm not. I probably don't fly as much as you guys. But I'm just imagining. I had to go down to for the SBA last year. Flew down to Jackson, Mississippi. I mean, I was on a tight. I had to do this whole thing in like less than 24 hours. I can't imagine them telling me, "Look, you got to get off of this plane. I've paid you $400, right. And if I say no, you beat the crap out of me and drag me down the aisle." That is so, my brain just can't even wrap around this. I can't think of any justification. And I'm sure, Sharon, somebody like yourself in PR, this must be like a nightmare for a client of any client of yours.
Well, it is a hard, it's a challenge. We've had some challenges with, we have clients who've had some challenges with dealing with the public. And one of the things that I think was really good about United is that they came back. They obviously the CEO made a big mistake. The president made a big mistake in his first initial way they addressed the issue. But when he came back with an apology, which was heartfelt and owned,
that's the way you do it, though. You own it.
You have to own it.
Well, tell us. Speaking of PR, we get back to the topic we're talking about: generational wealth, and we were talking about the financial state of African-American women in particular, and Sharon is an expert. She's a PR. Give us your background. I know you're in the PR, and tell us about you and your company and what you do.
Okay, so our company is Robinson Associates, Public Relations, Public Affairs. And what we do is we work with clients who are dealing with the community and also with issues with the government, and we usually create like strategic communication plans to advise clients on how to move forward, how to create a relationship, and communicate their goals to the public in a way that the public can receive it. When clients have an issue that they're trying to address, we counsel clients that transparency with the public is the most critical component of the whole communications effort. Make sure we're transparent. Make sure the public has a way of talking back to you so you can hear and listen to the public. So our firm is now 23 years old, so we're excited about the work that
we're doing. I bet my daughter would love you. She's majoring in PR at American University, and she's going to be interning over at Discovery Channel across the street this summer. So
wow.
She's like, and that was a very coveted position. It's like
very
so. So anyway, PR is for people don't understand and want to find out more about it. I'm sure they should contact your company, and you can give out your information when we get to the break. But tell us about this. We were talking about this intergenerational transference of wealth, but we were talking about the state of black women, the financial state of black women in the country. And so when people, I was kind of in lightheartedly saying, well, we see people, they look so good, they got the nice car, they got the bag and so forth. But that is not the root. That is not the problem.
No, it's not. It's not. And thanks for bringing that out, Robert. The issue really has to do with the system, the fact that African-American women, when they go out to, after finishing college, go out to look for a job, and often they start in employment at a rate that's lower than other groups of people. And the ability to have a mentor in corporate America is really challenging, and because most of the mentors are not African-American, and they have a hard time getting someone to mentor them through the process so they can move up through to the C-suite. Yeah, there are not a lot of black women sitting in the C-suite. There are not a lot of black women on boards. So it's kind of a challenge in terms of the ability to earn money. But what this studies that we've been looking at regarding wealth disparity points out that there are several factors that differentiate the ability for someone to accumulate wealth, you know, black or white. It has to do with home ownership.
Let me jump in that before you, because I remember back when they were talking about the health care debate, and I'm just telling how people can distract you. Like I was using an example of, you know, people got, they have a designer bag or nails done. That's it. When people point to those things as a distraction, just like the guy was doing the healthcare debate, was saying if people didn't use iPhones, then they could afford insurance.
Right.
What's an iPhone going to cost you? A couple hundred bucks? Mm-hmm. What's a Louis Vuitton bag going to cost you? A few hundred bucks? We're talking about generational wealth. It is a systemic problem.
Right. It's systemic in that some of the policies that we have regarding the tax code, that affects, you know, there are deductions that are available for the wealthy that are not there for others who don't own homes. For example, the mortgage tax deduction. If over your lifetime, in terms of your income, if your income is low over the lifetime, when it comes to Social Security, you're going to have a lower Social Security amount at the end of as you get older. And so over the course of the whole lifetime, there's this whole perception that perhaps, you know, you're spending the money, but really there are policies that are preventing you from really
getting the money in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. And so one of the most dramatic contributors to that, of course, is the age in which someone owns their home.
Okay.
So on average, whites purchase their homes 10 years younger than African Americans.
Really?
So the one thing that we can help to do, what we can do personally to decrease the wealth gap, to close the gap, is for parents to help their kids purchase homes early in life.
Hmm. But don't you think there's a part of that, even still, that is, in my mind, systemic? Because when, you know, like you read these articles that say, you know, Sally and Ben were able to pay off all of their student loan debts and pay off their mortgage in 10 years by doing X. But the article may never say that Sally and Ben got $1 million from their parents that were able to do that in the first place, and their parents own a summer home, and this, you know what I mean? So there's a part of that that's also, in my mind, systemic as well.
Right.
What I think they're linked, I think that's what Sharon is saying, that what you're saying is true, but it may start with something as basic as home ownership.
Right.
That is like the root. That's where it starts.
So the greatest drivers of growing wealth, racial wealth gap, you know, male or female, just the gap between the races, whites and blacks, is years of home ownership, the household income, unemployment, which affects African Americans at a disproportionate rate, whether you have a college education, and inheritance, just as you're saying, inheritance. And so if you're not handing anything down, if you didn't start out with the benefit of a parent of inheritance, and
like Donald Trump got $14 million dollars to start his company.
So we want to think about what can we do.
Okay.
We don't want to just look at this and say, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Look at the difference. Look what's going on with us.
We can do that's something we can do.
Okay. We can. And so, for example, when my son was in medical school, he was young, you know, was in his early 20s. I helped him to get a down payment to purchase a house. He said, oh, Mom, I don't want to buy a house. I'm in medical. I'm in school. I said, oh, no. You want to purchase as early as you can. So I took money out of my retirement, helped him with the down payment, made sure his name was on the deed so that he could develop credit with the bank. And then, you know, we didn't know at the time when he bought the condo that Ritz-Carlton was going to be built across the street. Well, that condo that he purchased escalated
get
in value and appreciated. So basically when I gave him money out of my retirement, or his inheritance early, which is what I did. I gave him part of his inheritance early. That appreciated a level more than if I had purchased insurance.
Or if you'd waited and given it to him after you passed away or if something happened to you.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
So give it to the kids early. Give them part of their inheritance. And the IRS is really kind of accommodates that because the IRS allows us to leave over $5.34 million to our heirs tax-free. What? So when I gave my son part of his inheritance, they made me fill a gift tax form, but he had to pay no taxes on that money.
But, Jared, but I know some people already think that you give a kid, a 25-year-old, 30-year-old kid, that kind of money early, they're going to end up blowing it or doing something irresponsible. How do you counter that?
Well, no, we went together to the closing on the condo, and, you know, I wrote the check.
So you didn't just give him a check?
No, exactly.
Okay.
But, you know, but because it's in his name. You
okay.
know, because of the owner.
Could he sell it and then go buy him some cars and clothes?
That's exactly what happened. Eventually, he sold the condo over time after it appreciated, and he, you know, went on to purchase other homes and got married. Then that's when, you know, the IRS said, well, geez, you know, your mother, you know, does she collect any of the benefit from the sale? And said, no, this because of the gift. That's when I had to fill out the tax form showing that it made this gift to him because I wasn't going to, you know, take any return.
Okay, would you say that this requires some type of education, though? Because if, like you said, he eventually sold it, and he could have done, at that point, he could have done whatever he wanted to with the money.
Yes, it was his own, he owned the house.
So what do you say to people that say, okay, now this kid is now, let's say a millionaire, just sort of throwing a number out there. What would keep that money now from going outside, escaping the generation and going somewhere else?
Well, you got to think about it this way, Robert. In terms of parents wanting to control things like that, the property is appreciating in value. The child is getting more and more mature, you know,
right.
over time, and you have given them a benefit, you know, that they need at a point in their lives when they're starting their careers that they don't need necessarily when they're 60 years old and you pass away. You're 80, you pass away, and you leave them an inheritance, and they're 60. Well, they spent most of their life, the careers now,
right.
you know, is going on the decline. It's not escalating. They need that money early. They need to start in early. So give the kid a start as early as you can in life so they can make these decisions.
Well,
they can't control it necessarily, and they may end up doing something else, but at least give them a chance.
But you said it just about 10 years, about a 10-year difference between starting the home ownership. And you alluded to some of the, I guess, some of the causes, racism, discrimination,
yeah.
Not having good mentors.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So how do we bridge? What do we, if you had to give somebody advice today, let's say somebody has a 19, 20, 30-year-old kid, what should they be doing right now?
What they should be doing is looking at their personal wealth. And also their plan for inheritance, what they were planning to do. Do they have a life insurance policy? Do they have access to their retirement income? What can they do to help the next generation behind them? And do it early. Don't wait to die. Do it while you're still living. And it's okay, you know, for the child to make decisions on their own, but you really have given, if you help them to invest in home ownership, I mean, that's the critical thing, is that it's an appreciating asset. Home ownership, then they have established a relationship with the financial institution. They're now worthy of credit. I mean, this is the biggest gift you can possibly give someone.
And what I like about that is because, and I was kind of, like I said, I was playing the devil's advocate when I was talking about the kids might go out and do some weird things with it. When you put responsibility on kids and you get them out of that mindset of a consumer and become more of a responsible party of an investor or somebody who's generating wealth instead of just making somebody else wealthy, it does change the mindset.
It does.
It does. I know for a fact when I'm dealing with my daughter, she has, her brain is like wired differently than most kids because it's something I instilled in her early.
Yeah.
You're not going to be a consumer. You're going to be an investor. You're going to be an owner. And what you're saying really adds another layer on top of that that really giving me some more ideas when I'm dealing with her.
Yes.
And I hope parents out here are listening that you don't have to accept the status quo. And that's basically what you're saying. This generational thing is not going to go away by maintaining what we've been doing since we got out of slavery.
Right. We can't do what our parents did. We can't wait, you know, and wait for an insurance policy or anything. We have to make a shift there. And the IRS is cooperating with us. You know, make the shift, fill out the gift tax form, and give the kids down payments for a house. Let them get into home ownership early.
And Karen. It's also important to have wills, you know, to not die intestate. You know, because I understand what you're saying about not waiting until death, but there's things legally
that you could be doing
that you can put into place, like trusts, that most people that are wealthy or people that want to to participate in generational wealth, they set up trusts for their children so that they can't do weird things with the money. So that's another thing that you want to keep in mind, too.
All right. Well, Sharon, I really appreciate you coming on. I must have you back. Tell people again how they can reach you if they have more questions about you or your company.
Okay. So it's Robinson Associates, and we're here in Washington, D.C. We've been here for 23 years. And we have a website, www.robinsonpr.com, and we welcome anyone to contact us through the website.
All right, folks. That is Sharon Goods. She was Robinson PR. She's giving us some great information on. And I want you to think about, folks, what is it that you're doing? What can you do to better your situation, to make your to secure your future? Now, later in the show, we're going to coming up next. We're going to talk about passive income, residual income. You folks out there who have businesses, who have jobs, you're working. You can't do this until you're 90. So you need to start thinking about what can you do now to supplement your income. You can't live off that. I think you even have a maximum of $2,800 a month on Social Security. So you can't even, I don't care if you're making a million now, that cap is still there no matter how much money you make now. So you got to think about ways to supplement your income to help that when you got that real estate going, you got the, all your other income methods coming in. How can we generate some passive residual income? We're going to talk about that when we come back. Folks, this is The Marketing Pulpit. I'm Robert Gate with your host. I have in the studio Tisha Hillman and Sharon Goods. This is The Marketing Pulpit. We'll be right back after the break.
Power for the people.
I'd like to welcome you back to the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show. We are here every Friday at 10:30 a.m. bringing you the good marketing gospel. We're not saving souls. We're saving businesses, saving jobs, saving our community. And we bring in some great guests. We have a great cadre of hosts and co-hosts. I have in studio attorney Tisha Hillman. And then Sharon Good, boy, she was laying down some knowledge, wasn't she?
Absolutely.
Oh, man, she got me thinking. Nothing changed, man.
$5. Wow.
But, you know, you were talking about, I know on some of your past segments, you were talking about things like prenuptial arrangements and marital, how to manage marital property, and that all that stuff just works together, doesn't it?
It does, because the whole purpose of all of this is really to protect, not only to... There, you have the financial side of things where you're trying to create wealth.
Right.
And then you have the planning side of things where you're trying to protect the wealth that you've created.
Because I remember a section back, one of your segments, you were talking about like a prenup, for instance. A lot of people feel like you got to be a basketball or a rock star to do a prenuptial agreement. But sometimes it's just a matter of protecting what's yours. You go into a business and you're not saying I want this person, if they ever leave me, to die poor and penniless, but you bring in a certain amount of assets regardless of what it was that you had before. What you build together after you married is yours. It's that team, right? You're just saying that the assets you had before you got married, you're saying you want to put that in a separate category.
Well, the law already puts property that you have before marriage in a separate category, which is non-marital,
right?
With the exception of if you do what's called transmutation of property, whereby you've turned non-marital property into part marital, part non-marital, by maybe your spouse, you have a business and your spouse is now putting all this energy and effort and money into helping you to build that business. And say you walked into a marriage, your business was worth $500,000, and your spouse is now saying, well, wait a minute, I put $500,000 of my own money, sweat, tears, equipment, whatever, into this business to help it accrue, value, whatever the case may be. Now it's worth $1 million. What about my $500,000 investment? Right. Now you've possibly transmutated non-marital property into part marital, part non-marital. And so a prenuptial agreement will help protect that. And then things like wills, like I mentioned before, wills, trusts, and those different types of vehicles, along with a prenuptial agreement, all of those things are estate planning tools that help you to protect what you have created.
Well, I think that's what I think. I think somebody needs to talk to somebody like you. When they got to be faced with all these, anything that involves a lot of money, believe me, there's some fine print somebody needs to take a look at.
Absolutely.
So tell people, how can people find out about you? I think that you are a good resource, and I'm glad you're a part of this show. So when people have these type of legal questions, they have somebody they can turn to. How can they find out more about you and your services?
Well, you can visit my website at www.tshillmanlaw.com, and that's Hillman with two L's. Or they can give me a call at 301-744-7996. And again, I'm at the law office of Tisha Hillman, and we are in Largo, Maryland, for those who would like to come by.
That's right. Right here, convenient to D.C. area, to Baltimore, Bowie, convenient to Northern Virginia, right off the Beltway. Convenient office right here in Largo, Maryland. This sister knows her stuff. Glad to have her as a part of the show. But you need to reach out to her if you have any type of legal questions and let her take care of it and put you into the know, into the know. I want to thank Ms. Sharon Good for coming by, laying that information on us about the wealth gap and some of the challenges that and she was speaking specifically on African-American women, but we know that these some of the challenges and issues that she was talking about is not specific to that demographic, but it just so happens that because of racism, sexism, and the biggest one is systemic really racism that has been, mm-hmm. It just didn't, just because you're carrying an expensive bag or driving an expensive car, that is not the reason. That is not the cause. That may be a symptom, but the cause goes way back. It's systemic. It's their reason. There's the glass ceiling, boardrooms, and she mentioned mentorships. If you go into a corporation, and I've been in that boardroom. I've been in that above that glass ceiling in several cases, and I'm gonna tell you, we just ain't there. We mm-hmm. are. When you're there, you're usually the only one. I tell you what makes me mad, though, teacher. People that get in that, they crack that ceiling and they get up there and they want to be the only, they want to remain the only one, because it like gives them bragging rights. I'm the only black person up here. I'm the only black mm-hmm. person that I'm the first and I'm the last. That is not going to help us at all. That might help you put line in your pockets, but we need the people to get up there when they crack that ceiling and they climb that ladder. Don't pull the ladder up behind you. Push that ladder back down so the next person can get up. And that's what we need more of in our community. So I appreciate people like Ms. Good, who has cracked the ceiling. Now she's willing to share this information and help other people get there. And that's the same attitude we have here on the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show. And that's why we're here every Friday at 10:30 a.m. bringing you the good marketing gospel. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Ms. BLE, BLE Executive Suites, Ms. Bernadette Clay over at 9701 Apollo Drive. Boy, if you're talking about a nice way to get your business off the ground. I give out marketing advice, but I'm also a business developer. That's really my title. Marketing is just one part of a big body of work called business development. That's also include advertising, sales, finance. There's a whole lot of things go into business development. No matter what you talk about, location is one of those needs that has to be addressed when you're trying to grow a business. Now, when I say location, that doesn't mean go out here and spend $1 zillion on a big old office space that you're not going to use. It means having a front, a representation of the physical aspects of what your company is. So if I'm an attorney, I can't be meeting people at the Tasty Freeze or at the McDonald's. I mean, maybe once or twice just to drop off that contract.
I've done that.
I know, but I'm saying, eventually they want to see that you are a real company.
Yes.
They want to see teachers sitting behind a desk at some point. They're going to say, wait a minute, you sure you're a lawyer? And that's what I'm saying. That's the beauty of BLE Suites. You don't have to go out and spend thousands and thousands of dollars to pay for a fancy office. You could be putting that money back into your business, hiring you some staff, hiring you some paralegals, paying for your travel expenses and so forth, because you didn't spend all your money on your office location. I have a new formula that I'm putting out here. And you all can challenge me, argue with me all you want, but this is another Robert Gatewood original. I want you to look at your advertising investments, the money you spent into advertising last year. Or you can even go back a month or 2 months. Then I want you to look at the amount of money you spent in your location or your office or your rent. If you are spending way more on your rent than you have spent on your marketing, you have a problem in the making. It may not hit you today. It may not hit you tomorrow. But you are setting yourself up for some hurt. I'm telling you.
And why is that?
Because your office, unless you own, now the exception would be if unless you own the building.
Okay.
That office is an expense. That office is an expense. Advertising and marketing is an investment. Now, they're going to show the same. Now, the accountant's going to sit here and argue with you. They're going to say, well, on your line items, on your income statement, they both count as expenses, of course, unless you own the building. But you're going to get a return for every dollar you spend on marketing and advertising. You should get a return, and sometimes, in some cases, thousands of percent return. You spend $100, you should get about $1,000 back. You spend $200, you should get about $2,000 back, or someplace close to that. That office space
that's a big
is,
return.
That's a big expense. Because you should spend about, you should be spending about
is that
10% to 15%
mm-hmm.
on the average. Now, it depends on your, it depends on where you are in the company. If you're starting out, you're doing setup and startup, it's going to be higher. As your income starts to rise, that number can actually level out lower. But on the average, you're going to be spending about 10 to 15%. And let's just say if you're spending 30, 25, 40% on your office space, you have a serious problem. Mm. And I'm not trying to knock people that's renting office spaces. I'm just saying you need to invest in things that's going to make you more money. Now, of course, you may say, well, look, I'm in an industry. I'm an attorney. I got to look good for my clients. Got to get some mahogany desk and some hardwood floor. Let me tell you, when somebody wants to get out of jail, they don't give a hoot what kind of floor you have. They want to know that you are good and credible. Which is, once again, why a company like BLE works, because they give you that look without the expense. I sound like a long case for BLE, but I'm making 2 points here. One, we have a good sponsor, BLE Executive Suites. But also, invest in advertising and marketing, and don't spend all your money on superficial things that's not going to give you any return on your money. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That goes back to what Ms. Cooper was talking about.
That's exactly right. It all ties together, folks. It all ties together. Anyway, call BLE Executive Suites, 301-322-1700, or go to BLESuites.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about residual and passive income. You really want to hear this. You got this. You want to make some money the rest of your life without sweating and working yourself to death. We're going to talk about passive and residual income after the break. This is The Marketing Pulpit. We'll be right back after the break.
Good morning, this WOL traffic update brought to you by Unbound WOL, where information is power.
The views and opinions of the following show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of News Talk 1450 WOL, Radio 1 Incorporated, or their management.
That's all we ask in our country, dear.
I'd like to welcome you back to the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show, folks. We're talking about wealth today. We're talking about making money. We're talking about getting paid.
Cha-ching.
We had Sharon Goods talking about transferring this wealth. She said, don't wait until you like 100 and your kids are 80 and then give them the money. Yeah, they're too old to take advantage of it now. That money could be out there now working for that kid. She's saying give them some of that inheritance now. Don't write them a check for $1 million. Go buy them a piece of property. Go down to the real estate office with them. Put that house in their name and then get them started, because one of the reasons for this income gap is because as a community, African-Americans start their home ownership 10 years later than whites. And that is a big part of that income gap. Disparity. So,
and owning real property is so important because, you know, like they always say, land is the only thing they're not making any more of, right?
They're not making any more land. They're not making any more land. So, yes, real property. Welcome. Also, shout out to everybody on this Good Friday. This is the Friday before Easter. I'm sure Donald Trump, he's probably taking credit for Good Friday.
He's like, I'm the reason Friday's good.
Before me, Fridays were bad. They were all bad. President Obama had the worst Fridays. I have the absolute best Fridays, the best Fridays ever. Very, very good Fridays. Crooked Hillary, she would have had the worst Fridays too. But since I've been in the White House, all the Fridays are good. That's my Donald Trump impression.
That was really good.
That's pretty good, wasn't it?
I'm impressed.
All right. See, that's one of my
sides. This is how you make
that's
your
one of my residual income. I do my Donald Trump impressions. Best impressions. I have the absolute best impressions. Better than that Crooked Hillary, that Barack Obama. I still don't believe he's born in America. Anyway. All right, folks, we're going to talk about, you're listening to The Marketing Pulpit. The number is 1-800-450-7876. 1-800-450-7876. If you have a question, give us a call. Also, my good friend, Mr. William Murray, he's recovering from surgery this week. He's a regular appearance on the show. He has his Millionaire Mastermind Institute. Hope he doesn't mind me outing him. But he had surgery, had heart surgery on Monday. And so he's been in our prayers and hopes, and he has recovered. I mean, he's in the recovery mode right now. He survived the surgery, so we're glad about that. And he's in recovery. So shout out to my brother, Mr. William Murray. We love you here at the Marketing Pulpit, and we wish you a speedy recovery. The number is 1-800-450-7876. 1-800-450-7876. We're talking about residual income. I'm just going to run down my list here, folks. Now, the first thing I want you to tell you about residual income, anything that worth has some value, you got to put in the work first. So there is nothing on this list that you can just walk out here and push a button and money just start flowing. But let me tell you, once it starts, and I know this because I think I have about five of these items on this list myself. So I'm not just pulling stuff out of the air. I don't have all of them, but some of them I do. But let me tell you, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is I check my cell phone, and I have my email, of course, coming to my phone, and most of my income goes into my PayPal account. And so I get a little email from PayPal say, "You got cash." Man, let me tell you, that is like, there is no better way to wake up in the morning when you got cash. And most of the time it's from some residual income that I have, either a book sale or some of my domain and hosting services or some of the franchise or residual income. So there is nothing that beats it. And the thing that, in case you didn't notice, it happened while I was asleep. I didn't discover it until I woke up the next morning. So there is such a thing as making money while you sleep. There is no such thing, though, as not putting in the work first. So most of these items I'm going to talk about means you got to put up a little work in the beginning. Now, I'm going to run down my list here, and this is important, folks. Of course, a lot of people, when I sent out my tweet this morning on Twitter, a lot of folks responded. It's like, wow, I definitely want to listen to this, and you do. And I would like to share this information. If anybody misses it, you can call me at my office, 301-839-2836. Or if you need any type of marketing or business development services, by all means, let me help you get your business going and to generate some income for you. First thing on the list, of course, is invest. Invest, whether it's in real estate, whether it's in stocks and bonds. Investment is like the old tried and true way of generating residual income.
How do you know what's a good investment, though?
Well, that's where you talk to the specialist. You talk to the stockbroker. You talk to a good real estate agent. You get the experts on your side. If you got some money somewhere and you want to keep that money going, invest. But in a lot of these cases, you may want to talk to somebody first before you just go out here and do it nilly-willy. So invest. The second one, vending machines, game machines, laundromats, ATM. All of these things, once you make that initial investment, once again, you want to make sure you're not investing in some fad that's going to be gone tomorrow, like I did with payphones. Oh, my God.
You invested in payphones?
Oh, come on, teacher. Don't rub it in. It wasn't like lately, but it was right before the cell phones came out. So once again, you've got to do your research, get the information and the knowledge, and nothing, like I said, nothing is guaranteed, but vending machines, game machines, laundromats, ATM machines, all of these things, you can have that money working for you. And once upon a time, payphone was on this list. So I was into I had the right mindset. I had the right idea. I just went into the wrong item.
So how much could one expect, just generally speaking, to earn from something like a vending machine? Because, I mean, I'm thinking if you, the most expensive thing may be $1.50.
Well, it depends on some items. I would say on average, you can make about $1,000 a month. It's not something you're going to quit your day job for. Most of the time, people are doing vending machines also doing something else. Now, let's say that may be maybe one good machine.
$1,000
for? Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. I had a payphone when it was in its good days. I was making about $300 or $400 a month with my payphones. And that was really just free money, because once you paid the phone bill, everything else was just free. Now, it has some issues. Sometimes people blow up your machine and kids get in there and put bubble gum up in there. They got little things you got to deal with. But that's in any business. So if you're making $1,000 a month in residual passive income, mm-hmm. let's say from one good, well-placed machine, you got to take things in consideration like location and the type of product you're selling. I have a client that has a hair vending machine. She's selling $80 chunks of hair from a vending machine. Yes. To be discussed on another day. But anyway.
Look on my face.
Okay, here's another one. Get yourself, build yourself a online course. Or maybe build a mini university online selling courses. Once you set up the platform, the software, build your curriculums, that money just comes in. You do it one time. You can do it by video. You can put in curriculums. You can do in person. But selling courses now has become a very popular. Matter of fact, I'm working on two learning management system websites as we speak. People that are going to be selling education programs online. Here's one. Write a book or an e-book. Now, you're not going to get rich with a book. I'm just going to tell you, unless you're like Steve Harvey or somebody, right? Think like a man, act like a woman. Unless you got a really, really some name cachet. But they do open up the door for other opportunities. But once you get a book out there, the money just is, you pay once for the to set it up, to publish it, to print it, and all that good stuff. But after that, if you have a book you're selling for $10-$15, the cost on that book really is usually around $2. So you're making about $8 every time you sell that book. And if it's an e-book, the cost is even less. So a book, another good way to create some residual income. Affiliate marketing. We talked about this. We did a show on this about a week ago. Affiliate marketing. That's when you can write yourself a blog and you get yourself a lot of traffic to that blog. Then you go in and put in some links to affiliate programs where you're selling people's products and you're getting a commission every time you sell that. Another good way to create residual income. Build an online store, but outsource the work. You do the technology, you build a website yourself, you set up all the systems, but you have somebody else doing the actual work. You can do consignment, you can do drop shipments, you can have somebody, the products be fairly fulfilled overseas somewhere, but you're getting paid on somebody else's labor. Here's another one. You can build an app. All you guys that know how to code and write, have technology backgrounds, build yourself a good app. Many people have jumped into the another income bracket by building a good app and getting some good residual income. Rental property, that goes back up to the real estate investing. Rental property is still a good way to make some money. Get yourself an old house, rebuild it. We have a client that comes on talking about rehabbing houses. Get you a property, get a good price on it, go in there and fix it up, then rent it out. Great source of residual income. YouTube, some of you guys have some great vocals, you have good instrumentals, you do good presentations online. You can build that YouTube channel and monetize it. You can have a YouTube, run ads on there, and you get paid every time somebody comes in and clicks on that ad, or it could be an impression, a CPM kind of deal. So you build yourself a channel, generate a lot of traffic, and then monetize it with YouTube AdSense. Resell other people's products. We talked about that also. Let's say if you want to go into one of these programs, there's a process called white labeling. So I could let you sell my services. Teacher, this is an example. Let's say Gatewood Marketing Web Services. I could let you sell my services under your name. So you can start a business tomorrow called Teachers Web Services, and I do all the work, and you get paid just by using your brand. That's called reselling somebody else's services, and you do it as a white label. That means they don't have to know that it's not yours, but you're reselling and you're making money off somebody else's work. If you're also a good programmer, another way is to write programs for people like WordPress. A lot of programs, people are writing programs, whether it's photo galleries or e-commerce systems or learning systems. They write these programs, then they put them on a platform like WordPress. They may give away the first one, then they can upgrade and make money on the resales. Here's another one. You buy expensive equipment and then rent it out to folks. How many people want to own a chainsaw, right?
A what?
A chainsaw. You ever bought a chainsaw? You ever needed a chainsaw? Guess what? Somebody needs a chainsaw maybe only once a year. You go invest in it, then you rent it out. Things like cleaning equipment, things that people don't buy on a regular basis, you buy it and rent it out. So another way to make some residual income. Rent a room. Rent a room in your house. Rent a room in your office. Rent out space. Rent anything. A good way to make some residual income.
Well, maybe not anything.
Not anything. Some things you don't want to rent, okay? How about peer-to-peer lending? You got a lot of money sitting around somewhere. Set up one of these platforms where you actually become a lender, lending out $1,000 here at a time, $2,500 here at a time. A lot of people are doing that now.
You got to be careful that you're not charging crazy interest rates, though.
Right, don't be a loan shark. Right. But anyway, these are ideas. Now, everything is not going to fit everybody. buy an existing business online. You got the money. You don't feel like doing the work. Look at something that's really, really hot and making it. You might go out and buy that business, and now it's yours. License out your ideas. You got a great idea. You go to a big company like Walmart or somebody and say, look, I got this great idea. I want to put it on the put your brand on it. Pay me a licensing royalty the rest of my life. Another good way to make some residual income. Got a great business? Franchise it. Take that business that you have and turn it into a franchise. And you get royalty fees and franchising fees the rest of your life. You can buy product from overseas and resell it on eBay. You can invest in a business and become a silent partner. But anyway, folks, this list can go on. I'm going to finish up some more next week, but I have a long list of ways you can make residual income. We're just getting started today, but we're going to have to wrap up the show today, folks. This has been the Marketing Pulpit Radio Show. Thank you, teacher, for coming out today.
You're welcome. Thanks
and
for having me.
And you can also find me. Go to my website, Marketing Pulpit, and GatewoodMarketing.com. Also find my information on the homepage as well as teachers on MarketingPulpit.com, folks. That's going to wrap up the show for today. If you want to be successful, you got to do these three things. Do the right thing at the right time, and you got to do it right. Enough talk. Let's get to work.
Good morning. I'm Nick Bovey. Here's the latest from NewsOne.com brought to you by Compassion International. Becoming a child sponsor with Compassion International will bring hope to a child in poverty. Find out how at compassion.com/radio. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser is hoping a new bill she introduced yesterday will strengthen the rights of sex assault.